Die, you killed all of them. They won't let that go. We can't get out of here.
Aaron grabbed her chin and said, two things have just happened. One, I killed the head of the Lesotho Defense Force. Two, we're fucking free. Start thinking about the future, not the past. Alex drew strength from his words. She nodded, wiped her eyes, and said,
I'm sorry. I wasn't any help. I was so afraid.
Aaron shifted his grip, now cupping her chin. He said, Sabra, your little action in there saved us both. You did everything you were supposed to do. She gave a tentative smile, scrubbed her eyes again, and said,
What was that about calling your wife? Is that a joke?
Aaron looked embarrassed, pulling out the cell phone. She said,
What?
Aaron turned to her and said, This is going to sound insane, but Shoshana is here. She's looking for me. Trying to maintain her new positive attitude, but failing, she said,
How do you know? She's in Israel.
We are connected. I don't know how I know, but she's here, looking for us. Alex shook her head and said,
This whole thing is crazy. I wouldn't have thought you could get us out of that room. If you believe it, I'll believe it.
Aaron dialed a number on General Masebo's phone and said, Belief's got nothing to do with it. Trust me, this isn't blind faith. It's more like gravity. It exists, and she's here. It's time to put her in play.
67. I circled Johann in his chair, no longer listening to his protestations of innocence. I was growing aggravated. I watched his head swivel around, trying to keep track of my movements. I said, Johann, I don't want to hear the lies anymore. I know much more than you think I do. Where is Aaron? He said again, I don't know. I gave him to General Masebo, and I never saw him again. I said, look, I don't even give a shit about the coup. I really don't. What I care about is Aaron and the fact that you fucks are trading this coup for nuclear triggers. You want to make a profit selling nuclear triggers? That's your business. When you want to sell them to Hezbollah, that's mine. I'm surprised, honestly. I didn't think you were a pure mercenary. I thought you had some honor, some respect. He looked shocked, saying, What the hell are you talking about? I glanced at Shoshana, and she nodded, meaning she thought he was telling the truth, using her freaky empath ability, something I'd grown to trust. I was surprised that she didn't want to skin him alive, but she'd been strangely submissive since we'd caught Johann. She just sat in the back of the room, looking subdued. Brett opened the door to the house, entering and saying, Got the two Land Rovers running. We can now get out of here. We bundled up Johann on the bridge, and then hustled him back the way we'd come. I'd told Brett to hotwire the SUVs in the field that the locals had abandoned, and left Veep on watch for the return of anything nefarious. It sucked he'd stay in the rain, but I couldn't leave our back door open. We'd returned to the overturned SUV and retrieved Johann's kit, which included weapons, radios, and body armor that he'd never get to use. We'd marched on foot to the safe house, meeting Jennifer and Knuckles at the door, both prepared to receive us after breaking into the cabin. I'd taped Johann to a chair and had begun questioning him. To Brett, I said, Any trouble with that? Any reaction from the gunfight? None at all. Shit. There are only like four houses in this place anyway. With the rain, they probably thought it was thunder. I nodded and returned to Johann. You didn't know what this whole coup was about. You didn't know that Tyler Malloy is doing all of this for nuclear triggers from Project Circle. Don't play me. You're not in a position to do so. Johann became reserved, but I could tell he wasn't surprised at the revelation. If he didn't know, he sure as shit suspected. He said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I looked at Shoshana, and she shook her head. He did know something. I said, I thought you fancied yourself the White Knight, someone who didn't simply play for pay. Why are you here, working to get nuclear triggers into the hands of a terrorist organization? He shouted, I'm fucking not! This is a strict contract. There are no nuclear triggers. A guy in Israel paid us to cause a coup. All we were doing was changing one prime minister for another. There isn't going to be any effect to the damn country. 24 hours later, it's running just like it did before. All that happens is a guy in Israel gets favored nation status for the diamonds. That's it. I began to think he was telling the truth, at least as he believed it. I said, Jennifer, get me the intercepts. She said, Pike, that's classified. I looked into Johann's eyes and said, do it. She left the room, and I said, I'm about to show you what you were doing. If I believe you were duped, I might be persuaded not to fucking kill you. Johann showed no fear whatsoever. He said, honestly, something stunk about this mission from the beginning. If what you say is true, you'll get no fight from me. Jennifer brought out the transcripts we had, along with the photos of him at the Castle of Good Hope. I cut his hands free, letting him survey the reports. He saw the pictures and said, you've been following me for that long. Why didn't you simply stop it? We weren't following you. We were following Tyler Malloy. He's a shithead, and he's trying to supply a terrorist organization. He nodded, but I could tell he thought I was trying to trick him. I waited, letting him read all the top secret collection we had. I saw him grow more and more agitated. When he finished, he looked up and said, Pike, you have no reason to believe this, but I had no idea. I don't care about this country one way or the other. I don't care if the coup succeeds. I do care about being used. I flicked my head to Shoshana, saying, and you care, of course, about not getting skinned alive by my partner. He said, that was nothing personal. That was business. This is not. This is treason. Jennifer said, treason? Against what country? Against me. He shook his head and said, I don't expect you to understand. But I don't work for terrorists, and I don't like being used. Colonel Armstrong lied to me. I knew he was lying to me, but I thought it was about diamond concessions or something else innocuous. He tossed the papers on the table and said, maybe I just wanted to believe that. He looked up, staring me in the eye. He said, and now I'll pay the price. I suppose I've earned it. I was a little taken aback at how willing he was to suffer for his sins. I decided to attack from a different angle. You've earned a ride in my aircraft, going to a black hole while we work to contain Tyler Malloy. Or, he let the question hang in the air, then asked, well, what? Or you help us, and you go free. He rolled his eyes, saying, I just got played by Colonel Armstrong. I don't need the same from you. I said, I'm fucking serious. You help us now, and I'll turn you loose. My organization knows nothing about you. I can make that happen. He said, why would you? I'm not stupid. I'm a fucking mercenary, taking over a country. And you're going to pretend that never happened. This isn't running a stop sign. I said, because believe it or not, I like you. He settled his gaze on me, thinking, and I drove home the point. Without you, I might not be able to prevent Hezbollah getting those triggers. I might miss. Yes, I have you, but that's not my goal. Tyler Malloy is my goal. You do what you think is best. Fuck the coup. Think of the terrorists. You told me before you don't play that game. Johann considered my words, then said, if I do, you can't kill my men. I'll get you Tyler Malloy, but this mission will go. I won't be a traitor to the men I've trained with. I said, you think they're doing some good? You think this country's going to be better off because of what you've engendered? I don't give a shit about this country. I care about my men. That is it. They didn't ask for this. Don't know anything about the payout. And I won't sell them for my own freedom. Knuckles, who'd been silent up to this point, had heard enough. He sprang forward and said, you fucking piece of shit, you care more about the assholes who are going to turn this country inside out than the country itself? What the fuck is wrong with you? Johann looked him in the eye and said, I care about my men. I will not betray them. That's the end of it. You want to kill me? That's the price I'm willing to pay. 68. I could see Johann was serious, and was amazed he wasn't afraid that his death would be the most horrific thing he could imagine. But then again, I'm sure he'd seen enough to imagine the worst. I was a little impressed. I said, I don't understand you, I really don't. You have a moral streak that seems to measure up with everyone in this room, and yet, you take pay for a coup that will do nothing but destroy this country. Johann said, you know anything about Lesotho? It's corrupt. Changing out the Prime Minister will do nothing to harm anyone here, any more than they're already harmed. If I thought this would have been a tragedy, I wouldn't have done it. It's just a change of management, and I was making a paycheck. There isn't any good here. Jennifer said, yes, there is. I did the research. They have a party that truly wants to help, one that isn't in the pocket of corporate diamond or water interests, one that wants to use the natural resources to help the people. Why didn't you fight for them? Johann looked at her like she was a liberal nutcase. He said, because they can't pay. I said, okay, okay. If I accept your conditions, how will you execute? Colonel Armstrong is going to land here after the coup with the new Prime Minister. When we're all said and done, I hand him to you. You do with him what you will. I owe him no allegiance anymore. He locked eyes with me and said, I'm serious. I don't work for terrorists. I said, so I let the coup go, and then get success afterward. That's my choice? Johann nodded and said, honestly, I don't know how else I can help you. If the coup fails, he's not landing. And if he doesn't land, you have no proof of what he's done. And without him, you have no connection to Tyler Malloy. You can burn it all to the ground once it's over, but you need to get him here because he's the link to the South African who has the triggers. Otherwise, no matter what happens in Lesotho, he won't be implicated. It's just one more failed coup. I said, and this has nothing to do with protecting your men. He laughed and said, it has everything to do with protecting my men. But it's not mutually exclusive. You get what you want, and I get what I want. My men get on that plane, and you get Colonel Armstrong. Look, I'm not trying to negotiate here. I'm telling you how to get what you want. And I want to help. I said, do you? He grimaced and said, I do, Pike, I do. You can burn me at the stake after. Seeing that fucker take a dishonest payment enough. Everyone on the continent knows I don't work for terrorists. Everyone. Most certainly Colonel Lloyd Armstrong. He knew and he still used me. He said it was so much venom I actually believed him. I said, okay. I get you're a little ticked at him. But how do I know you can execute the deal? Because I'm the ground force commander of the entire operation. I'm the one calling the shots for the coup. I'm the man that'll bring in that aircraft. You've captured the only man on the team who could do it. I nodded, saying, should have known. Good. I leaned into him and said, all that remains, then, is you telling us what you did with Aaron, the Israeli. He grew cagey looking at Shoshana, fearing her. He said, I told the truth. I did question him. But General Masebo took him. I have no idea where. I slapped the table and said, that's not fucking good enough. We're running out of time. Your damn coup is going to start in a couple of hours, and I'm not leaving here without him. He said, I told you what I know. I'm not hiding anything. I said, well, how about I let his wife in on the questioning? I turned to Shoshana, expecting to see the Dark Angel appear and scare the hell out of him. Instead, I saw her leaning against a bookcase, resigned. I said, Shoshana. She looked at him, then me. She said, he's telling the truth. He doesn't know where Aaron is. I said, bullshit. He's hiding it to protect his ass. She shook her head and said, he's not, I can see it. He's not. I'd like to kill him right now because of what he did, but it won't get me Aaron. She was so despondent, I was unsure of what to say. It was crushing. I thought Aaron was dead, and now I saw that Shoshana was starting to believe it. Which meant I didn't want to believe it. He was alive. She'd told me that not more than an hour ago, along with the feeling that he was in deep pain. The room remained quiet, Johann going from one face to the other, and everyone avoiding Shoshana's eyes. A phone began bleeding with a ringtone that most definitely wasn't the task force. I said, "What the fuck is that?" Shoshana began digging in her bag, saying, "It's my phone. Someone's calling my phone." "Who the hell would have that number?" She said, "It might be my employer," meaning the Mossad. She frantically dug it out, hope in her eyes. She looked at the number and said, "It's local." She physically deflated like a balloon losing air. She answered, all eyes in the room on her. "Hello?" I saw her jerk upright, like she'd been hit with an electric current. She did nothing but listen, then said, "I'm here. I'm right here. I'm close." She listened a little more, then said, "Don't worry about that. It's not just me. I'm on the way. And I have a force that won't be stopped." She listened again, and I saw her eyes water. She said, "I've got Pike Logan with me." She nodded at the unheard words coming through the handset, then locked eyes with me. She said, "Yes, he's a wrecking crew, and he has a team. We're coming for you. Stay alive." She hung up, saying nothing for a moment. She wiped her eyes, breathing deeply. I said, "Well?" "That was Aaron. He's alive." She couldn't get the next words out, overcome now that her worst fear had been vanquished. Growing frustrated, I said, Where is he?" Tentatively fearing my answer, she said, "He's in the middle of the military base housing the Lazutu Special Forces, hiding in the woods. He's killed a lot of people and they're hunting him. He's got Alexandra with him, a single AK, and he's surrounded by the entire base." She dropped the phone, knowing it was an overwhelming request. She said, "I told him we could help, but it's damn near impossible." She looked back at me and asked, "Can we?" She was willing to go on her own, facing a force she had no way to win against, fearing I would say no, but the odds wouldn't matter to her. She was going no matter what I told her. I nodded, saying, "Yes. Yes, we can." Her mouth dropped open in surprise. I said, "What? I can't be called a wrecking crew and not prove it."
"You heard the part about him being inside a special forces base, right? Surrounded? And you're still willing to go?"
Knuckles said, "Yeah, we're willing. Shit. We've been chasing his ass over half the world. We're not going to quit now. Anyway, it's not as bad as you make out. From what we just saw, the entire Lazutu Special Forces Regiment is being used for the coup." She said,
"I will never forget this."
I said, "You've already told me that. Should I start keeping score?" She smiled at my smart-ass comment, and I saw Shoshana coming back to life, the killing machine at her core spreading its wings. I nodded and said, "Everyone kid up. We're going hunting." Johann said,
"What about me?"
I looked at Shoshana, wanting her opinion. She stared at him for a moment, doing her weird thing, then nodded. I said, "You want to make this right?"
"Yes, I do."
I said to Knuckles, "Get him his body armor and radios." Johann said,
"What about a weapon?"
I smiled. "Not so fast. I'll keep you alive defensively, but you'll have to prove good faith with our deal before I'll let you have a bullet launcher." I didn't wait for the protest I knew was coming. I mean, I would have bitched about assaulting a special forces base with my fists. Knuckles dropped his kit bag at Johann's feet, and I said, "We roll in 5.
69. Aaron advanced through the small copse of trees, dragging Alex slowly behind him, the undergrowth grabbing their clothes at every step, the noise to Aaron sounding like an elephant wandering by. He'd initially tried moving up the mountain, away from the majority of the buildings, to either escape outright or, if they reached a protective fence that proved too hard to cross, at least find a place to hunker down until Shoshana could arrive to help. Instead, they'd run into a mini-city of cement barracks, with men out front cooking over open fires, drinking beer, and using trails to go back down the mountain, winding right by their hiding spot. He'd slowly retrace their steps, fearing they were going to be discovered by accident. Once they'd returned to level ground, he'd crouched in the undergrowth, thinking. Alex had whispered, "What now?" "Pretty easy on our part. We just need to stay hidden until Shoshana arrives. But I want to do it as close to the front gate as possible. I don't want to force her to penetrate the length of the base." She trembled, saying, "I'm not sure how long we can sit here. Those trails are all over the place. Sooner or later, someone's going to stumble over us." Aaron realized that Alex was barely holding it together, but he didn't falter for it. Given the complete lack of experience and training for the trials they'd been through, she'd held up pretty well. He said, "She won't be long. She's on the way right now." Alex nodded, then said, "I'm more worried about what happens when she is found. How is she going to sneak in here and then sneak us back out?" Aaron quietly chuckled. He said, "She's coming with a team, a friend of mine from America. They'll sneak when they can, but kill when they can't. They think they're conducting a snatch and grab, then hightailing it off the base." Alex said, "They think they're conducting a snatch and grab? What's that mean?" Aaron said, "Well, they are doing that, but we're taking out more than just us. We're going to rescue some of the men in that prison." Alex hissed, "What? Are you crazy?" "Shh! Keep your voice down. You heard them talking about killing Thomas tonight? I can't let them do that."
"Yes, you can. We can't be responsible for what they do to their own people. This is their country. We can't save everyone."
She started vibrating in fear at the very thought.
"Aaron, you're going to kill us both trying to do that, along with your friends."
Aaron's face dropped in disappointment. He said, "Alex, without Thomas, you would have been gang-raped every hour you were in there. I would be dead. As far as I'm concerned, every minute now is just extra time I would have already lost. He's coming with us." Alex drew back, the words cutting deep, and Aaron could see the shame fall over her. She said,
"I didn't mean, I know it's the right thing, but we can't."
And then she seemed to come to grips with what she was saying, understanding her fear was sealing another man's fate, one who had already saved her life.
"Okay, okay."
She took a breath and pointed to the east and said,
"I think the gate is that way. I was in the front of the prison, and I could see trucks coming and going toward the west through my window."
Aaron smiled and said, "Good, very good. We'll stick to the woods as long as we can." She started to say something else, and he patted her arm, saying, "Drop it. Forget about it. I already have." He struck out in the direction she'd indicated, hoping the woods extended all the way to the fence line. They did not. He reached the edge of the cover, staying deep enough inside to remain in the shadows of the brush. He saw a rutted track, snaking its way around a U-shaped cinder block building with a single lamp on the far corner. He heard movement and crouched down. Lurch and another man came running up to the building, shouting something in Sesotho. Two men came out, one short, with a bald head and a thick neck, looking like someone had slapped a bowling ball between the shoulders of a 5-foot mannequin. The other was the exact opposite, a tall, thin man, reminding Aaron of a cattail caught in the wind. Lurch began shouting, waving his arms, and Aaron knew he'd returned to the interrogation cell. He'd found the general. The bald-headed man rattled off a sentence and then snorted, as if he was trying to clear his nose. They went back and forth, bowling ball head snorting each time he finished, like he had some form of Tourette syndrome. The tall man raced inside the building, and Aaron knew the window for their escape was ticking down. Before the thin man could return, a lorry came flying up the gravel road, screeching to a stop, a cloud of dust enveloping it. The driver leapt out and ran forward. Then, close to 10 men spilled out the back, all armed with AK-47s. At first, Aaron thought they were the search team, until they unloaded two bodies from the back, dumping them unceremoniously on the ground. The driver began arguing with Lurch, the latter looking confused. Lurch began shouting, gaining control. Aaron recognized two things. One, Lurch outranked everyone there, and two, nobody but Lurch knew Aaron had escaped. The truck full of soldiers was a reaction to something else, not a planned response, and it would take time for Lurch to develop a course of action. Aaron grabbed Alex by the hand and began going back the way they'd come, trying to find a path that would allow them to circle around the group. He hit a line of trees that went south, sparsely running between two tin shacks, and took it. He stopped in between them, slowly inching forward, and was overpowered by the smell. The door to the one on the left opened, and a soldier exited, buckling his pants. Aaron whirled at the noise, and the man shouted at him. The soldier realized something wasn't right, and began screaming, a banshee wail that split the night air. He turned to run. Aaron dropped his AK, darted forward, and caught him around the neck, silencing the noise. He sensed the man's upper arm rotated and flipped him over his hip, slamming the soldier into the ground. Aaron dropped onto his neck with his knee, using the force of his body to kill him outright. Aaron surveyed for other threats, but found only Alex, crouched with a hand over her mouth, shocked at the violence. Aaron picked up the AK, then heard shouting from the direction of the U-shaped building. The sound of the truck split the night, and Aaron grabbed Alex's hand and began running through the trees. He reached one of the few asphalt roads on the base, seeing nothing but open space and decrepit buildings beyond it, the area sporadically lit by rusted lamps bolted to the roofs. Behind the buildings was an open field full of waist-high grass and undulating hillocks. He saw headlights to his right and said, "Come on, fast." They sprinted across the road, caught briefly in the glow from the truck, then were across, back in the darkness. He avoided the lamps of the buildings, continuing to the field. They reached it, and he dropped to a crouch, saying, "Get low. Get below the grass." They started moving west, and the truck stopped on the shoulder of the road, the men spilling out. He reached a small ravine and ducked into it, scrambling until he reached the end. He poked his head over the top and saw the fence line about 70 meters away, a 10-foot chain-link barrier with razor wire on top. A guard tower with a lone sentry was spaced every 50 meters. To his right, 100 meters past the northern tower, he saw the front gate, brightly illuminated, with a drop bar and two soldiers standing guard. So close. The northern tower turned on a spotlight, followed by the southern one, and they began randomly sweeping the field, curious about the commotion surrounding the truck. Sooner or later, Lurch would coordinate their actions. He dropped flat, looking back the way they'd come, and saw the men from the truck spreading out in a line, Lurch giving orders, the Sesotho language floating out in the wind. The soldiers began moving forward, and Lurch shouted in English, taunting them, "Jew, we will find you. You have nowhere to go. And when we do, the girl will be the searcher's reward. You will be mine. I'll leave your body naked, just like you did General Mosibo." Alex looked at her clothes, and Aaron realized Lurch thought they'd taken them as some kind of statement. A final insult that must have driven him mad with rage. Aaron dropped the magazine in his AK, pressing down to determine how many rounds it held. It was full. He said, "Get behind me, in the bank of the ravine."
"What are we going to do?"
"Fight."
70. It was a 40-minute drive from Arisia to downtown Maseru, but the base happened to be outside the city, so we could be on site in 30 minutes or less. I used the time to pick Johan's brain. He detailed four primary targets, of which he was tasked with taking the television and radio station down, as well as cutting the primary ISP for the country. I said, "What will happen now that you're out of the net?"
"When I give the call, they'll execute, and won't even miss me. The TV station was to prevent the word from getting out, but truthfully, it's closed at night, and by the time we're through, it should be too quick to even matter. It's a risk, but not much of one. The main thing was keeping South Africa from knowing anything was going on."
"I thought they were in on it. They're giving up the triggers. I heard the guy called Colonel Smith."
"He's in on it, but that's about it. I don't even know who he really is. But he specifically told us that if South Africa thought its water concessions were being threatened, he wouldn't be able to stop the response."
"What about the truck that ran off? The men you were taking as your force?"
"You killed their command. They're just a bunch of privates, and not that good, honestly. The best soldiers went to the hard targets. I got the dregs because our target was really more like a simple breaking and entering. If I were to guess, they're driving around the city wondering what to do."
"Okay. What can you tell me about the base, other than the location?" He described it as relatively decrepit, with a single drop bar entry, a couple of guards out front, and buildings spread out as if nobody had a central plan when they constructed it. The barracks for the SF regiment were up on a hillside, and the main headquarters was deep in the woods off by itself. I said, "So you've been on it? They know you? Can you get us through on a bluff at the gate?"
He laughed and said, "No, the only reason I was on that base was to be interrogated when I got sloppy on my reconnaissance here."
"Interrogated?"
"Yeah. Masibu kept his involvement in the coup secret. One, because he knew someone would leak it if it got out, and two, to protect him if it went to shit. Because of it, I was rolled up when I was doing my targeting work by some counterintelligence guys. I couldn't throw his name out for any help, because the only ones who know about the coup are the ones directly involved. And he kept them quarantined on a training mission. I'm sure his plan is to blame the SF regimental commander if anything goes wrong."
"Where's he, the regimental commander? Is he on a target or on the base?"
"He's lying on the side of the road. He was in my vehicle when you ambushed us."
"Okay. Anything else about the base?"
"It's ringed with guard towers, but that's more of make-do work from what I could see. The usual lazy privates baking in the sun for little reason. There isn't a real threat to the place, and they aren't pastured for one. There's not much else to it. There's a military intelligence company, some engineers, and the SF regiment. It's spread out and nobody really talks between the commands, from what I know."
I nodded, then said, "You have some reports you should be making? Something to let everyone know you're good to go?" He looked at his watch and said,
"We're within the window. I get an up, and I can initiate. You want that?"
"Yeah. As long as you aren't going to send a distress signal." He laughed and said,
"What good would that do? All that would cause is the end of the coup. You'd still have me."
I said, "Get to it." Then clicked onto our internal net and said, all elements, here's the warning order. Knuckles and Veep, you're up first. We're going to drive past the gate road entrance and let you two roll out. You get in firing position and take out the gate guards. There are supposedly only two, you copy?" I got an up from both and said, "We'll roll in, and I expect the gate to be open, so don't fuck around. We're going to penetrate and do a quick snatch and grab. wherever we can locate the precious cargo. Break, Carrie. That's where you come in. Give Aaron a call and find out where he is on the base. Just a general location. I need to know if we're going to try sneaking in 10 feet or run it like Mad Max to the end. You get him on the line, get the information, then keep the line open. When I give the signal, meaning I think I'm close enough for compromise, I want him to fire a double tap in the air. Wait a second, then do it again. We had no way to pinpoint Aaron's location. No beacons, no cell phone, geolocation, no nothing. And I wasn't going to trust some long, drawn-out description of what was around him. Firing was risky, but the quickest thing I could think of. She said, "Roger all." And I turned back to Johann, saying, "How'd the radio calls go?" He put down his hand mic and said, "We're in business. All hell is going to break loose in about 10 minutes. I nodded. And Brett, the driver of our vehicle, said, "We're about to intersect the road that runs next to the base. We're 5 minutes out before we hit the gate road intersection." I nodded and said, All elements. 5 minutes before the intersection. Carrie, what do you have?" We rolled right next to the perimeter fencing, and I saw searchlights all over the field. A string of men in the distance. Double arms length apart, all armed. Shoshana came on and said, Pike, I just talked to Aaron. He's in an open field, and he's being actively hunted. He says he won't be able to wait on a call to fire."
"Why?"
"He's about to start shooting now."
71.
I hollered at Brett, pointing out the window. "That's them to the right. He's to the right. Get off this road." I saw a dirt trail appear to our left, angling away from the asphalt. He said, "Hang on," and jerked the wheel, throwing us all against the side of the vehicle. The rear vehicle followed, and we stopped out of sight of the asphalt. I got on the net. "Same call, different location. Knuckles, you take the northern tower. Veep the southern one. Who's got the breaching gear? We need the bolt cutters." Veep said, "They're in my ruck. I've got 'em." "Dig 'em out and roll. Get in position, but don't trigger until we've made breach. Knuckles, you good to go?" "Just give me the trigger. Veep and I will handle it."
Johann said, "Give me a gun. You can't breach with just the two of you."
I stared hard at him. He said,
"Give me a gun, Pike. Let me help. I won't hurt anyone but the enemy."
I said, "Brett, give him his weapon. I'm going back for the bolt cutters." I jogged to the trail vehicle and saw Shoshana kidding up. I said, "Whoa, you're not going anywhere. I need Jennifer and you to drive these vehicles to the Exville point when I call." She said,
"Fuck that. I'm going in. Aaron's right there."
She was on fire, and I knew she would be out of control once we broke into the field, which was exactly why she wasn't going to enter. She would listen to nothing anyone said, least of all me. "Shoshana, I need someone to drive the truck. It's not going to magic to us for Exville, and that someone is you." Jennifer came around, and I handed her the keys to my truck. She gave me the bolt cutters. Shoshana glowered at me, and I said, "You good?" She said nothing. Jennifer put her hands on Shoshana's shoulders, leaned in, and with her back to me said,
"We're good to go. Standing by for the call. Go get him."
I nodded, clicked on the net, and said, "Knuckles, Veep, you in position?" I got an up from both. I said, "Johann, Blood, you ready to go?" Brett said, "This is Blood. I'm next to Johann. We're ready." I jogged up to them and without preamble said, "Showtime." We stalked our way through the darkness at a half jog and reached the fence. I started cutting, making a hole big enough for someone to get through carrying a casualty. I reached the top, with Johann pulling on the links as I cut, and I heard the first round crack through the air. I looked out into the field and saw the right of the line shooting at a depression about 70 meters away. Then a muzzle flash returning fire. Aaron. I heard someone in the depression scream, and the spotlights centered on his location. I said, execute, eliminate the threat in the towers and knock out those lights. I kept clipping, and both Brett and Johann began suppressing the right side of the line. The fire slacked off immediately, the men dropping flat and shouting. Knuckles came on. "Target's down." One second the spotlights were on the ravine, and the next, they were aimed up in the sky. I said, "Suppress!" Then ripped the links aside, seated my weapon to my shoulder, and began running to the depression. The left side of the line saw me and began firing in my direction. I took a knee and returned it. Without commands, we began flip-flopping toward the depression in a bounding overwatch, someone always firing while someone else moved. The right side of the line gained enough courage to begin fighting again, and I started hearing the unique snap of rounds breaking the sound barrier around my head. I closed within 30 meters of the ravine, seeing the muzzle flash still returning fire, and shouted, "Friendly to the rear! Friendly to the rear!" I saw Aaron turn toward me, then rotate back to his shooting position, blasting away. I leapt in, and he shouted over his shoulder, "Alex is hit!" Brett fell in beside me, and I said, "Check her out," then took a position next to Aaron, picking off targets. I saw a large man screaming at the soldiers to advance on us, and some of them did. Johann leapt into the pit, and Aaron's eyes got wide, his barrel rotating toward him. I pushed it up and said, "He's with me." Aaron snarled, "That fuck is with them." I said, "Not anymore. Trust me, it's complicated." Johann said nothing, moving to the rear where Alexandra was crouched, Brett over the top of her, bandaging her leg. Johann took off his body armor and put it around Alexandra, saying, "What do you have?" "Thigh wound, in and out, no contact with the bone. She won't bleed out, but she can't move on her own power." Johann said, "You ready to get the fuck out of here?" She grimaced in pain, but nodded. He turned to me and asked, "You ready?" I said, "Yeah. Brett, you go with Johann. Aaron, get ready to cover." Johann said, "Aaron." He turned, and Johann tossed him his rifle. Aaron took it, nodded, and shouldered his beat-up AK. I shouted, "Go!" And Johann slung Alexandra over his shoulder, leapt out of the ravine, and began running in a zigzag pattern back toward the hole in the fence. Brett followed behind, bounding about 30 meters before stopping and giving cover. Seeing us escaping, the remaining soldiers put up a ferocious amount of fire, with three having the courage to charge across the field. I dropped one, Aaron hit the other, and the third dove for the ground. I heard Brett shout, "Go!" And we flipped out of the small ravine and raced past Brett, then rotated around, peppering the area around the truck. The return fire had dropped to almost nothing. I called Jennifer and gave the command for exfil. I saw the fence in front of us, a pair of headlights coming in. We dove through the hole just as the SUVs came rolling up. We piled into the two vehicles helter-skelter, and they sped out, throwing gravel. Jennifer led us back up the road where they'd staged, then pulled over so we could adjust and reconsolidate. I was crammed into Jennifer's vehicle with Aaron, Brett, Veep, and Knuckles. Shoshana had Alexandra and Johann. Aaron said, "Where's Shoshana?" I opened the door saying, "Brett, check out Alexandra. Make sure she's good to go." He left, and to Aaron I said, "She's driving the rear vehicle, and trust me, she is a giant pain in the ass." He smiled and said, "I knew she would come, but I didn't expect you. Thank you." Jennifer leaned over and pecked his cheek saying,
"It's really good to see you. Alive, I mean. Sorry you missed your honeymoon."
He chuckled, opened the door, and said, "That's the damn truth. Coming to Africa was the worst decision I've ever made." Jennifer said,
"I don't think so. Sometimes you need to lose something before you realize how valuable it is."
He glanced back and saw Shoshana standing outside the driver's door of her vehicle, looking toward him. He said, "I already knew."
"But she doesn't know that you know, and she wants to."
He patted her hand and said, "Thank you again," and exited the vehicle. We watched like preteens hiding in the woods spying on Lover's Lane, with Knuckles passing out nods to penetrate the darkness. Watching Aaron approach, Shoshana's face reflected a childlike innocence, full of expectation and hope. Aaron reached her, and she said nothing, simply wrapping her arms around him and burying her head in his chest. He held her for at least 10 seconds, then pushed her back, kissed her forehead, and said something in her ear. Even through the green glow of the nods, I could see the joy on her face. He cupped her cheeks and kissed her on the lips. She wiped her eyes, and stood on tiptoe, leaning into his ear. She whispered, and then did something so unlike her, it made me wonder if I'd ever known her. She licked his neck softly, looking for all the world like a lion meeting a mate after a kill. Later, Jennifer said it was a kiss, but I know what I saw. Shoshana glanced back at us, and we all ducked down, positive she could see us even without nods. Hiding below the seat, Jennifer said,
"Wow, this is like National Geographic."
Knuckles laughed and said, "Don't make any sudden moves, they trigger on movement." I poked my head back over the bench seat and saw. I'm not even sure how to describe it. Serenity? Peace? Triumph? Whatever it was worth every bit of effort we'd expended. I said, "This is better than Jerry Maguire. If she says you complete me, I'm never letting her live it down." Jennifer and Knuckles laughed, and I joined in, because we were just a bunch of school kids watching a reunion on a deserted road after fleeing a firefight in Africa. We were normal people. And then I said, "Uh-oh," because we weren't normal people. Like an idiot, Johan came around the vehicle and stuck out his hand. Aaron punched him in the face with all of his weight behind it, lifting him off of his feet. Johan hit the earth flat on his back and gained some smarts. He remained on the ground. I leapt out of the vehicle, running to the confrontation and jumping in front of him. I held up my hands and said, "Aaron, I know you had it rough, but you don't understand the position we're in right now. There's more going on than you know." Aaron let out a breath and nodded. "That's correct on both sides." "What do you mean?" He looked at Shoshana and said, "We need to get back in that base. There are men still in the prison that we need to rescue."
72. Thomas Naboni heard the crackle of gunfire outside the cell window and instinctively knew it was Aaron. He smiled wistfully, happy for his friend but sad for himself. He knew tonight would be his last on Earth. He was simply waiting on the executioner to return. The uniformed tribe heard the same gunfire and grew restless, pacing about in their cage at each new burst. Their angst was driven by the guards themselves, who'd also begun marching about in confusion, sometimes abandoning their post for long moments of time. Everyone in the prison, both the keepers and the kept, could feel danger in the air. The gunfire confirmed it. It didn't last long, maybe 30 minutes tops, but soon after, much farther away, other sounds could be heard. Maybe it was his imagination, or maybe the fight had just moved off the military base. But Thomas was sure he could hear gunfire coming from the city. The first indicator that something was amiss had been the removal of Aaron and the ominous words from General Masebo about having a big night tonight. The next had been his short, painful interrogation at the hands of Lurch, when he'd broken and confessed to helping protect Alexandra. Now it was the noise of gunfire. One of his trusted friends, a pharmacist in a former life, placed his back against the wall next to Thomas and whispered, "What does the shooting mean? Good or bad?" "I don't know." Thomas didn't have the heart to say what he truly felt. For them, it could be nothing but bad. "The guards keep leaving their posts like they're trying to find out what is happening. Nobody has seen the captain since he took the Israeli. I think nobody is in charge right now." Thomas knew his friend was driving at something. "What's your point?" His friend pointed to the man the guards had been punishing for weeks by withholding food. "Nobi isn't going to live much longer, even if we simply remain. But that isn't going to happen. General Masebo threatened you tonight. After you, it will be all of us." He leaned in to Thomas and whispered, "Maybe we should try to escape. We won't get a better chance." Thomas glanced up at the blanket-covered toilet hiding Aaron's window, thinking about their options. What his friend said was most probably true. But it didn't alter the ultimate problem. They were inside a guarded military base, one that now had active gunfire within it. Thomas said, "We won't get out of the compound. I'm not even sure we'll get out of the prison. The uniform prisoners may stop us just to curry favor with the guards, and they outnumber us 4-1. His friend remained quiet. Thomas knew he wanted to speak again, but he wouldn't unless given permission. Like every member of the Sioux tribe, he held Thomas in the highest esteem, with almost reverent deference, because Thomas had kept them alive. It was more than merely survival, though. He'd done so without losing an ounce of his dignity. He'd carried himself in the hell of the prison, just as he had when he was leading the revolt against the corruption of the government, the indignities heaped upon him never defining his character. Because of that loyalty, Thomas felt the pressure like a diamond being formed in the mines of the Lesotho Highlands. It wasn't just about him. It was about all of them. Was he serving his men by insisting they remain, or was he simply frozen by his fear for his own survival? And did it really matter? At the end of the day, was getting beaten to death by General Masebo any more dignified than dying on an escape run across the base? He glanced at the blanket again, wondering if Aaron had finished his work. He said, "Keep an eye out," then stood up. He glanced furtively left and right, but could barely even see the front of the cell in the gloom. He pulled the blanket aside, his pulse beginning to race. He crouched behind it, listening for anyone reacting to his use of the toilet. What he heard was a scraping above him. He glanced up, seeing the sky through the hole in the wall, then felt a piece of masonry hit him on the shoulder. He brushed it off and continued to stare. One of the bricks disappeared, the hole growing larger. He scrambled up onto the bucket of feces and slowly stood upright. Outside the window was Aaron, balancing on something below him and working the bricks one by one. Thomas almost slipped off the bucket in shock. Aaron reached through the window, snagged his arm, then held a finger to his lips. He whispered, "I'm almost done with this. Get ready. You're coming with me." Thomas's mouth opened and closed, no noise coming out. Aaron pried another brick free, and Thomas found his voice. He said, "We must all go, all five of us. And they go out before me, starting with Nobi." Aaron smiled and said, "I would expect nothing less." He clicked an earpiece and said, "Pike, Pike, I've made contact. We're starting to remove the bricks."
I heard the call from Aaron and tapped Knuckles on the shoulder. He sidled forward and placed an explosive breaching charge on a side door at the back of the prison, on the other side of the building from Aaron. Our job, should he call for it, would be to assault, coming in hard and killing anyone who opposed us. But the primary course of action was stealth, using a reverse escape plan that Aaron had set in motion for himself before we'd arrived. At our reconsolidation location, Aaron had told me he was going back in to rescue a guy in the prison, which I'd thought was absolute insanity. Shoshana, for once, felt the same way, but Aaron wouldn't listen, which at any other time would have been sweet justice, because I'd live with her shit for days. She, like me, felt that attempting to break back into the camp and then into the prison was absolutely crazy, even for her. But Aaron had been adamant. A man named Thomas Naboni had kept him and Alexandra alive, and because of it, Aaron felt he owed a debt. He was unwilling to leave Thomas behind. But I was just as steadfast that our mission here was done. All we had to do now was let the coup play out and collect Colonel Armstrong. Risking my life for someone who'd helped Aaron was a noble gesture, but going back in was asking to get everyone killed. And I wasn't too keen on that outcome, noble or otherwise. Johann had heard the argument going back and forth and said,
Trying to penetrate that base again is not smart. General Masibu will have it on lockdown after what we just did. I know him. Getting in and out will be impossible.
Aaron had said, you don't need to worry about him. General Masibu is dead.
Dead? How do you know?
Aaron spit out, because I fucking killed him. Johan was speechless for a moment, then said,
you killed the head of the Lesotho Defense Force?
Aaron turned toward him, the violence held just below the surface, saying, you have a problem with that? Was he a fucking friend of yours too? The point is that the base will be in complete disarray. There won't be any lockdown, because nobody will order it. Just being in the presence of Johan left Aaron vehemently angry, and Johan realized it. He backed off, saying to me,
that's the power base of the entire coup.
I said, will it affect your plan? Will we still get Colonel Armstrong on the ground if the general's dead?
Yeah, it shouldn't alter getting Armstrong. Musibu had no actual command or decision-making in the assault. That's all up to my guys. He was just supposed to come out to the airport with me for the grand finale of meeting the new Prime Minister. The problem will be after, in the consolidation of power. The military outnumbers the police, but the police will side with the current Prime Minister, with a vacuum on the military side. I can see this not being clean. It could drag out and spark into a counter-coup.
I went to the natural conclusion, asking, which means South Africa could be called in, and the contact with the triggers may balk?
Possibly. I guess it depends on how long it simmers. My concern is what I told you before. I wanted a simple change from one administration to the other. I don't want a bunch of bloodshed of innocents, which might now happen.
Aaron said, like you give a shit about them. Maybe you shouldn't start brush fires you can't control. Mosibu's dead, and there's nothing we can do about it. Thomas is alive, and there is something we can do about that. I said, who is this guy? I mean, why is he in prison? He's the leader of a grassroots political party, one that was fighting the corruption of the entrenched bureaucracy. He got a little too powerful with the people, and was removed. In his words, he and his entire inner circle were disappeared. According to the guys in the prison with him, he's their version of Nelson Mandela. The population loved him, which, of course, is what made him dangerous. Jennifer looked at Johan and said,
that's the guy you should have been backing, instead of just throwing another corrupt idiot in charge.
Johan said,
I don't think you understand how this works. I simply get paid to do a job. I didn't plan this thing. I'm just executing.
Aaron said, you disgust me. But Jennifer's words, as usual, were genius, and gave me an idea. I said, Johan, if we get Thomas out, do you think we could install him as Prime Minister? I mean, could we meet the Deputy Prime Minister on the airfield with the police, arrest him on the spot, and install Thomas? Especially since Masibo's out of the picture to fight it? Johan considered for a second, then said,
the police will probably back him simply because he's been jailed by Masibo. Enemy of my enemy, all that. But he won't be strong enough to remain. We need outside influence. He'll have to be immediately backed by an outside state, because those inside won't back anyone in the confusion, leaving him open. He has no power base.
Jennifer said,
we need to get the United States involved.
Aaron waved his hands and said, Pike, none of this matters without Thomas, and the longer we wait, the more that base begins to consolidate. He was right. We could debate the end state all night long, but it mattered little without Thomas in our grasp. I nodded at him, then looked around the group and said, okay, this is outside the scope of our mission set. I'm not going to order anyone to go, but I'm game. Anyone want out? Aaron watched my team closely, but all he got was Knuckles saying, you're wasting our time. Same plan as the original? I grinned and said, same plan. Load up. 73. 10 minutes later, we were parked at the intersection of the blacktop and the dirt road that led to the front gate of the base, waiting on the call from Veep and Knuckles. It wasn't optimal, but we'd found an abandoned thatched hut on a deserted road, and had put Alexandra inside it. I was a little hesitant to do so, for obvious reasons, but she was completely supportive of the plan, probably because the alternative was coming on base with us and just sitting in the SUV. And so, we'd made sure her bandages were swapped